Radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Phil Conlon is here. How you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil, and happy Thanksgiving or Columbus Day or whatever.
Yeah, we're glad that somebody threw a dart at the calendar and decided this is the time to do it, Thanksgiving. Yes, it's Canadian Thanksgiving. There is one in the States that comes up in November. But CIUT will be busy at that time fundraising, so we won't be able to. So we're doing it early. We're going to talk to Jane Stillwater. By the way, she has a great blog spot, jpstillwater.blogspot.com. It's a great column called The Union Made, My Wonderful Visit with President Assad. So she has recently met President Assad. And on this show, we have said that he's a very significant leader and who has prevailed, I would say, against all odds, certainly against Bush, Obama, and whomever. Big news coming from Syria right now. We'll be getting in. We'll probably ask Jane's opinion about this news. And in the second half, we're going to talk to Robin Philpott, publisher of Baraka Books. He's going to be in town Wednesday because Gary Freeman has a novel, Blue Exile Blues, and it's at 777 Bathurst. There's going to be a book launch. And I think the man's name is Horace Campbell is going to be introducing him. He's a sports writer, commentator at the Toronto Star. Speaking of stars, I think we are connected now with Jane Stillwater. Are you there, Jane?
I am.
Hey, Jane, thank you very much for joining us. I enjoyed very much your column, your blog spot, Union Made, My Wonderful Visit with President Assad. And it seems very timely that we're talking to you because your first words to President Assad, by your account, was thank you for saving Syria. And if I'm reading the headlines right, there are many, many Kurds now saying the same thing today. Tell us about this. We intend, of course, to talk to you about the column and your conversation, but I guess we better ask you what you make of all the headlines.
Boy, do I have opinions.
Start where you like. You are a political Cassandra. You're free to say anything you like.
I have so many opinions on that. Right now, I'm reading Max Blumenthal's book, The Management of Savagery. And his main point is that savagery cannot be managed. And he goes through this Keystone Cops scenario of America screwing up thing after thing with the Mujahideen, funding them in Afghanistan, funding them in Libya, funding them in Syria, where they're called ISIS or Daesh. Time after time, trying to do what Canadian author Naomi Klein says, which is disaster capitalism. You turn a bunch of ISIS crazies loose on a country, and you have total chaos, and then you can step in and steal their oil. And it's worked, except for the blowback. The blowback's just been insane. So what's happening with the Kurds is the Kurds put their money, their eggs all in one basket, which was the United States, and now they're spinning in the wind, but not for the reason that we are told that, oh, you know, the poor sweet Kurds. The Kurds have blood on their hands too, because they linked up with America to try and overthrow President Assad. And now it seems like Turkey's going in there, and then if President Assad or the Syrians fight back at all, then Turkey can go, hey, 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 they're attacking us. Mm-hmm. We need NATO to protect us. And then NATO will move into Syria, and it'll be a even bigger mess than it is now.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
It's a very... Fortunately, you, by the way, are the type of American journalist I appreciate very much. You seem to be, what's they say in Missouri? I'm from Missouri. I got to be shown. So you go and take a look.
Exactly. That's what happened. I didn't know what was going on in Iraq in 2003. So I said, screw that. I'm just going to go over there and find out myself. And it took me 2 years to get and embed over there. So I went over to Iraq, and I saw what was happening, and it was just another disaster, capitalism disaster. And I started writing about it, and immediately they started telling the other journalists, hey, don't speak to her. And then the next time I tried to go over, they denied me entry.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that you're an ex-Marine, and I work with the Marines in Al Anbar, and they were doing a good job. They were trying to, put a lid on the fire of injustice that America had let loose in Iraq, which is what you should also read, this management of savagery,
mm-hmm.
how Americans totally, totally screwed up all that.
We're speaking to Jane Stillwater. By the way, you have a book. I know the subtitle, is it? Bring Your Own Flak Jacket?
Yeah.
What's the title of that book?
Bring Your Own Flak Jacket, Helpful Tips for Touring Today's Middle East. and I wrote it in, 2009?
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly relevant today. I every once in a while I go back and look through it and I go, geez.
Mm-hmm. Well, so
nailed it then, nailed it now, doesn't matter, nobody listens. The propaganda machine in America and even in Canada is so extensive, which I'm really glad for your show.
Yeah. Well, but you put your finger on the truth. I mean, it is very, very difficult to get the simplest information.
Yeah.
Just bare facts. Our media won't touch it. And that, which brings us to your meeting with President Assad. I tell you why I was so pleased to see it, because I'm always asking, what did the man say? And I get psychoanalysis, I get morbid commentary, I get strange esoteric theories, but nobody ever says, today he said, so that I can assess that. But you actually were in the same room with President Assad. You were attending. Tell us what the conference was in the little detail, how you got called and went to see President Assad.
It was a meeting of union representatives from all over the world. It was very moving. I sat between a man from South Africa and a man from North Korea and a woman from Palestine, as well as, the European countries and all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I got over there because I'm a member of SAG-AFTRA, which is the Screen Actors Guild that Ronald Reagan used to be the president of, and he turned in his fellow actors for being communists whenever somebody else wanted a part that he wanted to get. Turn them in. They're communists. And he denied that he turned it in. And then Seth Rosenthal, I'm very bad with names, wrote a book called Subversive, and he got 250,000 pages of FBI Freedom of Information Act documents, and it showed that Reagan turned them all in.
So when he was the president, he was just acting.
No, when he was president of the Screen Actors Guild. Oh, yeah, when he was president of the United States.
He's pretending to be. Well, either way, he was.
Right.
I think he was acting. So you're a celebrity actress, so you got to go to be represent yourself as a unionist, and you attended,
right.
And they were some of you got the opportunity to talk to the president of Syria, which is pretty remarkable.
We did, and I was sitting there scribbling, taking notes as fast as I could, going through one ballpoint pen after another. So
I think you told us you used up two ballpoint pens in 24 hours.
Yeah.
We'd like to see those diaries, by the way. I mean, I'm not the U.S. Congress, but it'd be great to look at your notes.
I took notes. Extensive notes of the whole conference, but they're all handwritten.
Well,
but anyway, I'm not a celebrity actress. I looked in the mirror 4 years ago and I went, oh my God, I'm old. What can I do with old? Acting. And because, you know, for an ingenue role, they have 1,000 applicants. For an old lady role, they've got about 10, and we all know each other.
All right.
So then I joined SAG-AFTRA. Last year, I haven't had a acting job since because unions in America, you know, everybody wants to be scabs. Nobody wants to. I mean, it's a real hostile atmosphere here.
Yeah.
So President Assad I was very grateful him for saying that thing about workers are the veins and arteries of a country. And he was very personable. And very likable and very intelligent. And, you know, to paraphrase the Pussycat Dolls, don't you wish we had a president that was smart like him?
Well, you know, this is, you could probably comment on that too. I mean, we as North America, I share this. Watching people who call themselves diplomats, watching people who are secretaries of state or press spokesperson, they all seem inept and clownish compared to the people who stand and represent Syria or many other countries of the world, China, Russia, others, who they are careful about what they say, they're knowledgeable, they're even likable, they even understand they should respect people, ask them questions. They don't seem to engage in the kind of theater that every American diplomat feels they have to go through.
Oh, good grief, yes. From Samantha Power to this Pompeo guy, where does Trump get these people? But Trump, you know, he's walking a very fine line between having the corporations, the powerful global corporations, threatening him if he doesn't behave and trying to keep his base happy. And, you know, I feel almost sorry for the guy, except that he's an out-and-out right crook who's selling out his country to the highest bidder. But other than that, he's walking on a fine line.
Well, think about it. I mean, if we remove him, the prize is Biden, who, you know, and his son Hunter. Again, we're talking to Jane Stillwater. It's a great column, by the way, a blog, I should say, jpstillwater.blogspot.com, reader books. You came to Toronto. I'm sorry we missed you. You've got to come back. Now, here's a quote. You made sure you took down his words, and this is the president said to you, this is President Assad of Syria, I'm happy to meet with you today because skilled workers represent the veins and arteries of every society. If the working class is okay, the society is okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody from the AFL-CIO could come up with that line.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think they would realize that they were crossing the line and getting into something none of their business.
Yeah. Unions, in America, they haven't fought back. They haven't protected themselves. Only the teachers' union and the nurses' unions are the only ones that are in America who are saying, no, We won't put this out. And the GM workers, I just finished a column on Ecuador, and the same thing's happening in Ecuador that has happened Egypt, Syria, where they're under attack for wanting to be a good government that is just to all their people.
Mm-hmm.
And so this thing in Ecuador is really exciting because everybody in Ecuador went get crazy and took to the streets, and now this guy who tried to sell them out to the IMF is backing down. Yeah, and I'm thinking, in my new column, I'm saying, why aren't Americans doing that? Why are they sitting on their heels when the General Motors strikers are struggling? You know, every worker in America should be out there in the picket lines with the GM people. And if Assad was here, he'd be out there in the picket lines,
he'd be doing
too.
That leads into another quote that you have from him. He says, and again, you have to read Jane Stillwater's blog to get this, war is the most important challenge for us now. We're trying to express the interests of the Syrian people. And for this, we're paying a great price. There's another line. State presidents have become like CEOs working for corporations. And if they don't pay the corporations, they will no longer be president. In one night alone, $250 million of weaponry was fired on Syria. He says the presidents are like CEOs working for corporations. Again, why doesn't the labor leader in Canada, the U.S., say that?
Yeah, exactly.
You say the teachers' union do, but nobody else.
How come the media doesn't quote them? I mean, we're getting the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and CNN and Fox are all giving one side of the story, which is, the poor, sweet working people of America are being victimized by the latte-drinking, Volvo-driving liberals. And it's not the liberals. This is an economic war on the American people. And the mainstream media puts it as a war on people that are heterosexual Christians. And nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Working class America is not being victimized by a lot of drinking liberals. I don't even drink lattes. I drink, herb tea. But
it's a tip for our listeners. By the way, you have a motto. It's your current motto. I assume you change mottos according to the season. But your motto today is "Stop Wall Street and War Street from destroying our world." You're talking to, you did talk to President Assad. You thanked him for what he's done for Syria, and the timing couldn't be more apropos. And you have a quote from him, and I thank you again for his words. People die for their country here because they are partners in this country, but we don't think this invasion will end anytime soon. However, due to globalization processes. But he's pointing out, he says, when workers become real partners in governing, then our work is done. There are no conflicting interests. When public interests become everyone's interests, terrorists and proxy terrorists will no longer exist. That's powerful stuff. And you wrote it down. I wish everybody else at the meeting had done the same.
I'm surprised that they didn't. But it was very moving. The whole thing was very moving. It all took place in this huge state house. And there were all these people from all over the world, and we were just sitting there soaking up what he was saying like sponges.
You didn't feel like giving a speech, right? You just sit and just listen.
Yeah, really. But if nobody else had asked a question, I would have jumped up and said, Something like, can I have your autograph? Can I have your autograph? Will you come to my birthday party?
Yeah. The thing is, he probably would. I mean, we don't understand Syria. We don't understand their history. We don't understand his family and the leadership, particularly under. You remember, President Obama said he had to step down, and the world said, and Canada said, "Oh yeah, the president of the United States has spoken. You, the president of Syria, have to step down." When he was faced with terrorists, and now. Yeah. At the end of this, we're not actually at the end, as he told you. It's going to go on a long time, but yeah, this is
especially
a pretty dramatic moment.
Excuse.
In the Kurdish areas, Sharmeen Narwani is reporting, it's on Kurdish television, they are cheering the arrival of the Syrian Arab army into the Kurdish communities. Cheering.
Yeah.
Very important.
They're Syrians, too.
It won't be reported in the Star, so I'm giving you a chance and me a chance to report it.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
So, now, again, we're speaking to Jane Stillwater. She is a war correspondent at Bring Your Own Flak Jacket is the book, and she has many other books. Go to her site, by the way, which is jpstillwater.blogspot.com. And by the way, this column, Union Made, is so nicely written and with your usual humorous touches and whatnot, but you're really actually dead serious, so we want everybody to understand that. You attended a talk that you want to tell us about, and we'd like to hear. We once interviewed Tim Anderson from Australia, political scientist, on this show, and he was there, and he was invited to give a speech at a university you attended. Can you talk about that?
I did, and it's really important. Not only he's got a book out called Axis of Resistance, and it's an update and companion piece for his book, The Dirty War on Syria. And he spoke at the University of Damascus in a room that had over 600 students, probably more, because I didn't notice there was a balcony It's too late to count because I love to count stuff. And they were all sitting there in rapt attention to what he was saying. And you know that, well, I live in Berkeley, and you know that the students at Berkeley, if they don't like something, they take to the streets.
Yeah.
And yes. if the students in the University of Damascus didn't like Assad, yep. You know, they would have stormed Tim Anderson and, you know, picketed it and all that. But they didn't, which shows the extreme support that the President Assad has among the intellectuals and students. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but the West refers to him as Assad. I refer to him as President Assad.
Exactly.
That's what he is. I mean, people call Trump. They don't call him president when they're being derogatory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There used to be that old distinction. People would say they could tell your politics if you said Fidel or if you said Castro. If you said Castro, everybody knew you'd from the wrong side of the street. Because, well, at any rate. But you're quite right about the way students react, and you can tell. You had a chance to sort of intermingle. You listened to how they must have reacted to him, interacted with him. What was that like?
Oh yeah, I afterwards I was taking photos of some of the students, and they were all saying what a wonderful speech it was. And then I went to the president. I don't know if it was the president, but somebody in the university had a reception for Professor Anderson, and I was lucky enough to go. And I really had to laugh because they served us Ferrero Rocher candies, which is the exact same thing that I'm going to go across the street and to the local store, the Berkeley Bowl, and buy Ferrero Rocher for Halloween. So that's one thing we have in common with Syrians. Yeah. We both love chocolate.
You realize that the sanction makers in Washington are listening, and they're going to try to cut off the chocolate. Probably to Berkeley, too, by the way. They'll sanction Berkeley as well as Syria.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing that the Syrians are worried about, and that came out at the symposium for the union leaders, is these sanctions are really, they're rough. They don't mess around, but it's also causing problems for Americans because countries all over the world are turning to Russia and China for their goods. Even Europeans are turning. So, and Iran, of course, and Syria, and and so it's backfiring because we're losing a lot of Americans. We're losing a lot of markets.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia and China said, "Sure, we'll take your custom. We're sure."
That is something that's unfolding more and more. Maybe even will happen with Turkey. I mean, if you sanction them, what choice have they got?
Yes, Turkey has turned more toward Russia, and that's something that President Assad said. You know, 20 years ago, we would have been totally reliant on America for everything, but now that Russia is opening up a banking system.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Ecuador and Venezuela are going to jump right in on that.
And as soon as democracy returns to Brazil, they'll do the same.
Oh, ojalá, as they say in... they say that in Brazil, they say it in Mexico. Mm. Let us hope.
Well, it's undoubted that Mr. Lula is... I understand now that they say that they want to release him from prison, but he says, no, you put me here, and I'm staying until you say I'm not guilty of anything. And they want him to go home, and he said, no, thanks. So I think he knows that the Brazilian people are going to do something.
Good for him. And then let's not even get started about what happened, the horrors that happened to... Honduras under Reagan and under Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
And goes on and on.
Yes.
And now all those poor people are at our borders. And and the reason they're there is because of us, of America, not because of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something I'm going to do in March, is go down and try and help in Tijuana, because before... The mothers cross the border seeking asylum with their babies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group called Al Ultra Lotto that supplies its volunteers with magic markers and Sharpies and indelible ink pens. And they go and they write the names of the children on the backs of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So that the children... will be identifiable by their parents. And sometimes the cell phones of the mothers, so that they can get their children back, which is just sad. That's sick.
Yeah. And by the way, it has been a policy of long standing to mistreat people at the border. My memory is Obama's had the previous record for removing people. And Canada, I have to tell you, as soon as people showed up at the border with their suitcases, they changed the law and made sure that, you know, and everybody was quite happy with that. As, you know, we have a serious reputation for hypocrisy here because we don't have the border, you know, that we like to talk about Trump. But when they showed up on the Canadian border in the Quebec area, the laws got quickly rewritten. We're speaking to Jane Stillwater, but it's such a pleasure because this column is, as far as I am concerned, it should be in demand because, I want to emphasize, you're the one who actually quoted verbatim with your two ballpoint pens in 24 hours the actual words. By the way, I wonder, did anybody record this? It'd be great to watch this.
Allowed to take cell phones or anything like that into the place because of the GPS that if the
Zionists... There is a danger, yes.
The Zionists knew that Assad and all these union people were in one place at one time, it would just be too much of a temptation.
Yeah.
But, oh, I was going to say something about...
Now,
when I was in Toronto 2 years ago, I was very pleased at the melting pot feeling there of everybody coming together and
yes.
and building on everybody's strengths.
It is the prevailing way, and you're quite right. The other thing is, we really have no excuse for being ignorant of the world. We have so many people here from every part of the world who, you know, it's the old thing, if you don't know what's going on in Afghanistan, Singapore, ask a cab driver, who's probably a PhD from there anyway, to explain. And probably we should do a reversal, you know, bring everybody with an academic record from around the world should be given a university post and let our phonies in the universities say start driving cabs. Everybody would be enriched by that, I think.
I'd go for that because you like Tim
Anderson. Berkeley would be first to join us on that one.
Absolutely. Like Tim Anderson was fired from his job at the university.
Yeah.
And also you have Dennis Rancourt. He was fired for his position on something or other
yes.
in a Canadian university.
There's been a number of jobs lost, and once again, the unions are silent when this happens, but you're in a country that respects working people and unions. Again, those quotes are great. Everybody should read this. Union made my wonderful visit with President Assad because it's all there, the basic outlook, and people can quarrel with it if they like. But you have to start with what he actually said. You can't make up words and put them in his mouth.
Right.
Jane Stillwater told us what he actually said.
And not only that, but, you know, I would say maybe 500 people have read my article, and you would think that 5 million people would want to know, well, what
You're
does this guy
absolutely
say?
Right.
But
You're absolutely right. I think all of our listeners should... get the article, send it to all their local editors and say, why are you afraid of this? Or I double dare you to print it.
Works
it
for me.
It doesn't have any naughty words in it. And Jane Stillwater is a well-known author and a great journalist. Jane, it's been terrific talking to you.
Thank you for
come to Toronto next time without coming and being on the show. We really like your blog spot, jpstillwater.blogspot.com, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much, and good luck to you too. Keep up your good work.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Jane Stillwater, and this is the Taylor Report. We have a little music called The Union Made, which obviously Jane Stillwater knows that song.